PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to episode 31 of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. You can find me on Twitter at CanadaanGolf, and you can also find us at Off Course THP on Twitter. With me this week is, I don't know what to call it, my great friend, my buddy from past experiences, my bearded brother. There's actually my Twitter helper, defender, sort of confidant. There's a lot going on here, but the short of it is it's Adam Rayberg from Bridgestone Golf. You can find him on Twitter at Raybirdie or there Bridgestone Golf. I can't believe I've got him today because while this goes out on Friday, he's actually earlier on in the week with me, some huge signings or re-signings for Bridgestone, today being Tuesday, recently. So Adam, welcome to Off Course. Very, very glad to have you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so you've got a couple re-signings, some pretty, I guess you could call them well-known players at this point. One's won, you know, a couple times. One's won like a lot more times. Bryson and Tiger are both back for multi-year deals, I believe. Very, very cool. How excited is everyone around the office?
Yeah, it's been something we obviously been working on this deal for a while with both of these guys. Obviously, Bryson winning the major as well. So it's very exciting. Obviously, Tiger, we know when his contract's coming up, Bryson's contract's coming up. They're two big, important guys, not only outside of just playing the ball on tour events, but for us, they're so pivotal in making the golf ball and picking their brain and them working with R&D. Tiger, great in that middle time when we do prototype testing, really integral, you know, very detail oriented. And he hits us up a few times throughout the year with some numbers and asks us questions. Bryson, way more connected. I mean, he's Zooming with our R&D team the Friday before the US Open. He's calling our guys maybe once or twice a week, Andrew over at our R&D facility, and picking his brain about some things that the ball's doing, questions. He's always looking for the future state of polymers and, you know, urethanes inside the ball, how we can make them better. He always has really cool ideas from a player perspective. You know, our guys are always thinking of the technical and material makeup and how we can manufacture the product. And Bryson has these really, just in the short time he's been with us, these amazing is to make it perform better from a player perspective. So he pushes our R&D team. Tiger, of course, pushes our R&D team to make the best product. So them signing back with us is much more further than a brand ambassador concept and more for the future state and building golf balls from the R&D perspective.
Yeah, it's cool because, you know, Bryson's obviously made it clear to this point that his perspective on your product is that it's an elite offering, especially by comparison to others, which I think everyone out there has the ability to make that claim for themselves. But I love that he's been so passionate about it and uses his own techniques to sort of validate that perspective. And then when you go to Tiger, it's just basic trust. He comes out with a perspective that, hey, this is a ball that I've had faith in for a very long time, and I'd like to continue that process like that. That's the kind of storied experience that you want to feel as a golfer looking for a new product, right? Like that, to me, that's got to feel pretty good beyond being a part of a staff that sort of represents that perspective from big time players.
Yeah, it's such a unique end of the spectrum for both of our guys. We have Tiger, who certainly can play whatever he wants. You know, money is not any option for any company that wants him. He's in high demand from everybody, but he really wants to play the ball he feels most comfortable with and trusts he has. I don't think it's a hidden thing now. He has a very long history with us, and it's not, you know, anything based on what's on the golf ball. It's the fact that he's worked with our R&D team for a long time. You know, he's got good relationships with a lot of people over at R&D. Ever since he came with Bridgestone, we've built that relationship more, have more access to him ourselves and to talk to him about building the ball. So Tiger really is kind of that long-term lifetime validity of playing the ball for a long time and winning, you know, massively on a huge scale. And then you have Bryson on the other, who's an upcoming star. And we, you know, got him right out of college, and we recruited him. He came to the facility, and he made that decision based on talking really to our manufacturing engineers, not so much R&D. He was really interested in how we make the ball and how we can make a consistent golf ball, because that was important for him, is ball number one being the same as ball number 500 that he puts in play. And so that really is what kind of put him over the top. And now he's a totally different dude from when he walked in the door. The things in the quality meaning, but now he's a 7-time winner with a major. You know, it's, he can really walk away and do whatever he wants. And, you know, he went out and he did. He tested a lot of golf balls. He told us straight up, hey, I'm gonna kind of play the field and see what's happening. And, you know, ultimately it came back and he liked the numbers that we work so closely with him. We make sure the ball fits his game. And, you know, he found that our ball actually performed the best and had the most quality, consistent control in his standards. And that kind of brought him back to us. So we have the guy who's the upcoming star, major winner now, the favorite heading into Augusta, and then Tiger, who's very, you know, obviously had did so much in his history as a player, who's validating the product as well.
You know, it's interesting. You're talking about someone who's has a long history of success with the ball and just going on and on. I thought you were going to say me, because, you know, I've had a huge relationship with you guys since J33, and then you went ahead and started talking about winning majors and stuff and totally eliminated my potential. Well,
you're like right in the middle. Like, Bryson's the upcomer with majors, Tiger is the legend, and you're just kind of the established guy in the middle that everybody goes to, knows that your opinion is valid, and there's no question about it. So I thought that just went without saying, but you're kind of right in the middle of Tiger and Bryson. So you know, contract negotiations with you are kind of up in the air for the next couple of years. I think we locked you down for a while, so we don't have to worry about that. You can go win as many member guests as you want, and, you know, your bonus will be in the mail.
Beautiful. Yeah, I got Fred Couples on the line, says, what about me? But that's okay too. He, so Freddie put in,
Fred's also a super legend.
He put in a new ball and a new color in the play, didn't he? RXS in yellow.
Yeah. It's a very interesting dynamic with Fred. I kind of hit Bryson and Tiger being so tightly knit with our R&D team. Fred's a different animal. Fred's more of a feel guy, touchy-feely. You know, he's not really wanting to get on TrackMan and see numbers. Quite honestly, we don't have a lot of numbers from Fred, period. I mean, we've got tons and tons of data from Bryson. We've got a pretty robust amount of data from Tiger. But Fred, who's been on our staff longer than anybody, the inception of Bridgestone is when he came in. You know, he's a much more feel guy. So basically what happened is a couple months ago when he was playing in the Senior Players Open, which is, you know, Bridgestone Senior Players, he liked the yellow, and it's all feel in his eye for him. So he was playing with a player, I think with another brand, Strixon, and they had a yellow ball in play, and he just liked the way it looked and the way it was going off in the air. And he quite frankly, he said he was nervous about it, because, I mean, we throw down a yellow ball or something when we go play with our buddies, and to me it doesn't make a huge bit of a difference. It's a color, and I like yellow because just because it's different. But Fred, he said when he teed it up, and we have him on video, he said, I felt nervous. I felt like I was teeing the ball up at Augusta. My hand was shaking. He goes, I bombed a drive right down the middle, and, you know, the rest is history. If it would have went off to the right, maybe I would have never played a yellow ball again. So he played well. He played good. And then the RXS was a cool transition for him because, you know, the guy, he's 60 years old. He still moves it, quite honestly. He still moves it very well. But, you know, on the Champions Tour, you know, those numbers hover right around 100 to 105. So the guys are slowing down. You know, their swing speed is getting to where it is. And he loved that kind of softer feel in the compression of the RXS, but he didn't want to lose any of the greenside spin. And so that's why he gravitated more to the RXS, is because it has a little bit softer cover than the RX. And he likes to flight those wedges a little bit. And we know he likes to hit those little butter cut, you know, mid irons into the green. So the ball had to still have a significant amount of spin for him. He's always been able to control spin off driver, so no big deal there. So him playing the RXS, we're super excited that he's going to play a yellow golf ball at Augusta. It looks kind of cool, and the nice green crispiness of the landscape. So he's excited about that. And he really loves it. He, for some reason, he calls it a green ball. He calls it a ball. We've told him a million times, like, dude, it's yellow, but he calls it green ball. He talked about it the other day at the senior event. He was like, I'm loving this new green ball. And so it's kind of funny, but he likes to fly. He likes the way it looks in the air. His eye can follow it a little bit better. So that's kind of how the yellow transitioned. And certainly the RXS, that soft feel, he just loves that.
So we know what those guys are all playing, and but I think most of your fans, your followers, are desperate to know which one is in play for you.
Oh, well, I love the spin of the RX of this. I'm kind of hovering right around over 105. I'm like 107, so I can still, you know, when I'm loosened up, I can still put a decent little move on it. But man, I want as much spin as possible. I've always been able to flight my irons down. So, like, not overspinning the irons, you know, as much spin as I can get, I can still kind of keep it in that little optimal window without over ballooning a 5-iron or a 9-iron. So I always like a bunch of spin. And I mean, give me all the spin in the world around the green that you can give me. I love hitting little 40-yard nipping wedges, the favorite shot in all of golf. That little 60 to 40 yard shot where you can kind of be aggressive and put a little nip on it and keep it low. And I just remember, you know, in my early years of R&D, going and testing the tour players and the, you know, we had Brandt and we had Matt, you know, Tiger and all those guys. And I remember Matt and Tiger did the same thing a few years later. I remember Matt hitting this low driving chip shot from like 20 or 25 yards with a 64 degree wedge. And we all typically know what happens with 64 is we hit it and the ball goes straight up in the air and it's like this little ooh shot. He was hitting these little low checkers and from 20 or 25 yards, he was literally spinning the ball back like a couple inches. They were hitting and they would go whoop and they spin back. And it just amazed me. And I always had decent spin on my full iron shots, but I just remember looking at those shots from those guys and just going, man, I want to do that. And so like, The R&D guy with the ball inside of me is asking all the questions about the prototype ball. But then, like, Adam, the nerd golfer, was like, how are you hitting that little wedge shot? Like, what are you thinking when you're coming into impact? And, you know, he talked about how shallow he comes in. And he lets all the wedge bounce and all the loft do all the work for him. And he comes in very shallow where most people think they got to hit down on it to make it spin. But he comes in very – he was hitting on this – we were at Frederica, which is right down the road in Sea Island, and he's hitting off the tightest lie you've ever seen. It's a 64-degree wedge. He's got like 8 degrees of bounce, and he's not taking a divot. He's just sliding into it so shallow, and that ball is just coming out with so much spin. I mean, from the 25 yards, I think he was spinning at like 6,000 on TrackMan. It was unbelievable. And he was just hitting these nippers that were spinning back on the green. And I just remember thinking, oh, it's amazing. And then like a few months later, we had Tiger testing, one of the first times we got out there to Medalist and test him. And that's all he does. He hits those low, just checking trajectory. And it is like a work of art seeing him hit a 40-yard wedge and spinning it back 3 feet from 40 yards, you know, just on a flat surface. And I mean, those guys you take for granted and you feel like you're out there as a player and you get it down to a one or two, whatever, and you're hitting these little good shots and you got a little puddle around the hole and you've hit all these 50-yard shots. And then I get out there and Tiger hits a 40-yard shot and he hits 15 shots of our protos and he makes three of them, you know, three or four of them. And he's not even like, you know, looking at the ball going in the hole and some of them we're clanking the pins and bouncing off and look at that and go, golly, man, that's moving the ball from 40 yards and controlling every single one's coming in this window. And, you know, just to kind of move to him because nobody cares about me, he's hitting these shots and we move from one proto and he says, that one's a little too high for my window. And we look at TrackMan and it's 0.7 degrees launches higher. You know, he's seeing those types of things. It's pretty amazing. But I love watching those guys hit those shots. That's my favorite thing to do. 70-yard in shots. I mean, Tiger hitting a 4-iron is majestic. It's awesome. Long irons for him is something that's amazing. But seeing him, you know, even couples and Bryson too, you know, his trajectory is so much different with his loss because of his iron links. But seeing those guys kind of work those shots is something that amazes me every time I see him.
You know, when it comes to Tiger, there's always this kind of basic understanding that his capacity to do things is just at a level that we can barely even comprehend. You mentioned these tiny little windows he's seeing, and it's not the first time I've heard a conversation about Tiger that relates to his ability to find minute elements wrong about a product. I mean, when you think about the cherry bomb is one of the most visible design elements of a putter in history, and that's predominantly because he's picky. Those little things that seem to be so inconsequential to all the rest of us, and he says just fix this and it's perfect. Like, it's mind-blowing. But you know, I really enjoyed that story, hearing what those guys can do, not because it makes me feel so incapable out there, but because it reminds us all what they're so good at.
Yeah, what that 1 or 1.5% that means exponentially so much more than 1 and 1.5%. That's what makes them so different than like me or you or somebody out there grinding and trying to shoot, you know, even par or under. You know, them doing those things every single time, never miss hitting a shot when we're prototype testing. You know, like, we all miss us when we're warming up on the range and playing it around, but you know, things like that. I mean, Tiger, you know, one of the things I always remember about our second round of testing with him is, you know, the guys are just like us. They'll have days where they feel like it's an A+ and days where their A minuses are A++, but their A minus is A minus to them. And our second round of prototype testing, when we got finished, Tiger basically confessed and was like, boy, that was some good hit balls today, guys. Cause he was hitting and I was just like, holy cow, is this normal? Like, this is even like better than the first time we saw him. And I remember on TrackMan, the oddest thing was, you know, with TrackMan, you see your little blobs where dispersion on all your clubs, like how they ladder up, and everybody's does this, right? You know, up to driver, it goes from pitch and wedge, and then, you know, it kind of spreads out, and obviously it's a little bit bigger, but his were such a straight line all the way up. It was so odd because his 4-iron dispersion was as tight as his 6-iron. And then his 6-iron was, you know, his 9-iron was a little bit tighter than 6, but it didn't like do this big cone. It was just like the dude was striping 4-irons at a dispersion rate, which looked like a 6-iron. And then his, you know, which looked also like a 9-iron. So those are the things I noticed working with Tiger. And, you know, how he's obviously, we all know he's a ball striker. He's kind of A++ across the board, most people believe. But one thing that's never changed is his ability to strike those mid irons. And that's one thing that stuck out even more than noise is how good he hit that 4-iron, you know, all day. It was just amazing.
Wow. You know, I don't want to downgrade the comparison, but I do think it's critical to reference something that I did recently on THP. And again, there's absolutely no point in me trying to draw that sort of comparison to the greatest, arguably the greatest ball striker of all time. But yeah, I mean, I had to do it because this is something I really wanted to talk about. It's a video I had a lot of passion for trying to introduce. And this all stemmed from my original meeting out with you guys at headquarters. I want to say it's last year, but I mean, time's just kind of stood still at this point. So whenever it was, I came out there, we did a video.
I think it's been over a year.
I got fit surprisingly into RX, not just for me surprised, but for you guys as well. And I got that sense while I was out there. And I really wanted to take an opportunity to extend that experience into the whole lineup from both a swing and a data perspective. And I know you've seen the video because you did retweet it, and thank you for that. But it's basically your four balls from the Tour B lineup. And what was so impressive to me is how accommodating they were to your story. I went in there with an open mind. Obviously, Tour B is a product I'm incredibly fond of, and vocally so over the last couple years, to a point where I think I got mad at you, one, for calling it anything other than B330, and two, for changing from Bridgestone to the Tour to the B, both of things I actually prefer now. So whatever, I was wrong. Fine. but I'd love for you to kind of take a look at this chart. Now, obviously, we are audio only at this point on the Off Course podcast. Maybe that changes in the future. But what I have laid out here for Adam is the comparative analysis between the Tour B RX, RXS, X, and XS. And what we're seeing here in the most simplified forms is everything you'd expect. The firmer ball has a little bit more speed. The softer ball has a little bit less spin. And by a little bit, I mean, we go from 5,400 to 6,200. And this is off It's an 8-iron, but it's technically a 7-iron. And then the ball speed changes very small, like somewhere between 1 and 2 mile an hour. When you look at this chart, what do you see? What do you think about that from, and you know, the kind of swinger I am, the speed that I put into it, I'm definitely in that upper echelon of speed from your ball's perspective.
Yeah, no. When the video hit, one of the best things I liked about it is it did lay out exactly what the strengths of each golf ball were. We have four golf balls, obviously, in the tour category, and they're kind of split down the middle, kind of how you fit into them by swing speed. But really, it's all about condition and how they fit your game. And, you know, first thing I looked at was your backspin. And just to kind of better understand if it falls in line with what we see on the robot, because we'll test 100,000 balls on the robot and there's a statistically analysis way of how they all fall because of construction and because of compression, how they're built, how soft the urethane is. And so obviously the XS is the softest ball as far as cover wise. It's going to give the most spin. And we saw that with your data approaching 6,300 with your spin. And then, you know, all the way down to the RX, which is really designed for a softer feel and to reduce spin. That's kind of that ball's strength, always has been. Even in 2007 when we launched it and there wasn't a thing that existed as a soft compression tour ball, we kind of led the forefront with that. It was really designed to give you that great urethane spin and feel you like around the greens, but take away a ton. And back then, think of 2007, we had like really firm tour balls. That's all we had. We had tour balls that were in the 90s, just about all of them, including ourselves. The B330 was, you know, Fred called it the Brunswick because it was hard and rolled forever. And we didn't really have a ball that was soft that could kind of give you that feel, but then give you the benefit around the green. So when we launched that ball in 07, really it was designed to take away a lot of spin on full shots, but then give you the benefit of what a tour player expects around the green. Still the same thing. That's the foundation and the heritage of the RX, and we just keep building on that. But anyway, yeah, we see that kind of polar end spectrums where the XS has a lot of spin and then over 1,000 different spin with the RX. And then the X and the RXS kind of right in the middle of those. And those kind of ladder perfectly with what we see when we hit these balls on robot. What I really liked about these is the carry distance and total that we kind of saw. Without looking at any of this, and you said, hey, I'm going to hit all four. These are exactly what I would have said backspin would have given you. And this is exactly what I probably would have told you that you're going to get in total yards. I would have said, you know, X and XS for you, X and RXS for you are going to be pretty similar. Those balls perform pretty similar condition wise than what you see with that mid iron, 8-iron, you know, 7-iron. Those kind of move close together. But the biggest difference you're going to see is between RX and XS. You're going to see XS have a lot of spin. So if you're trying to optimize spin and get spin up with your mid irons and low irons, then you're going to want to tend to kind of move towards XS. But if you're kind of wanting to maximize distance and take away some spin, you're going to lean a little bit more to RX. But to kind of, you know, I could keep talking about this data all day, but that's kind of the gist of it. And your numbers kind of fill in pretty good of what I would expect from these golf balls. If you or a robot hit, you're pretty much like a robot. Standard deviation so tight. You know, just player for days. So,
God, I'm not paying you to be on here, Adam.
Exactly what I expected.
So, what's interesting about that test, we chose to use a club that had quite a bit of forgiveness built into it. And we did that because our original findings were that the variances in a more player iron sort of eliminated some of the variables that were in play. And once you started to separate the difference between what makes an average golfer average, you start to increase the potential of showing what the actual benefits are to those balls by comparison to each other. So that was a really fun exploratory experience and also a nice reminder to me that while I'm lauded a little bit aggressively by some of our friends over at the THP community for being a robot in my swing, it's actually very, very untrue overall. But I hope you guys had a chance to go out and watch this video. If you haven't, THP TV on YouTube has a ton of content you can check out. And the goal on this is to say, look, it's not a perfect science. Every individual is different. And I know we had a discussion-based video that we did last year, Adam, that basically said exactly that. You guys have kind of set the stage for expectations, and it's up to every golfer to decide what suits their game the best. What I love is you guys have four balls that you know, can really introduce that finite focus that golfers are looking for. And that's what I found with RX. I could play three of those four balls with absolute confidence of performance, but I choose the one that, that best serves what I want. And that's to play and win and not be super, super angry.
No, that's totally what the balls are built for. And, you know, obviously some people like to argue the point of, oh, it doesn't matter. And, you know, like every ball's pretty good and da, da, da. You know, all distances are pretty similar when you hit them with driver, when you hit them good. That's kind of what a few other companies kind of say. Like when you hit it good, the distance is the same. But yeah, I mean, when you hit a ball good at a perfect condition, if you're, you know, 25, 50, you know, backspin and you're launching it at 12 degrees, but we don't all do that. And if a guy launches it at 9 and then spins it at 2,900, they're not all going to go the same distance. And that's the argument I've had with some people before in the past. Yeah, at a perfect condition, a perfect, they are pretty similar because it's almost like you flatten the variable, you flatten the curve of dispersion. But if you start hitting the golf ball like a person who doesn't want to change their swing and they hit down in it because they feel like they can control it a little bit better, but their spin is high and they're willing to kind of sacrifice that because of their spin, then you can adjust the ball to gain them distance. You can put them in an RX and take away some spin and they're going to hit it a little farther and they're probably going to hit it a little straighter. But somebody who doesn't want to get rid of their slice because they feel uncomfortable and can't work with a coach, you can fit them into a ball that actually will help them. And it all comes down to the consumer, and you said it best, and not to beat a dead horse here, but you know, getting the ball that fits you is the best way to do it. And you know, if it doesn't matter, you know, in a high handicapper, it definitely doesn't matter. We found during our ball fitting that a lot of high handicappers benefit more from getting fit to the right golf ball. You know, if you're an extremely slicer of the golf ball, I'll use a ball inside of our own category. Like if you're an extremely high and slicer of the ball and you're out there playing Tiger's ball, the XS, that's probably a bad fit for you. You know, it's our ball, but it's probably a bad fit for you. So you probably should move to a ball that has a little less spin on the driver. And that's what we do inside of the ball fitting it up or did it online. You know, even if you fit our own golf ball, you could certainly be fit to the wrong golf ball or choosing the wrong golf ball. So it matters about that. It matters what you want around the greens. We've always said that. We've never said that the green doesn't matter. We have four urethane product golf balls. So obviously greenside spin is very important to our engineers, to our tour players, and to players who play every week. So getting fit is so important, making sure it fits your game, looking at the numbers, making sure you do a little research and test a few golf balls and make sure it kind of matches up with your style of play.
That's a great perspective to have, and something we've shared personal and over the last number of years, the basic idea that, yeah, you can fit for clubs. Why the hell wouldn't you fit for a golf ball? And, you know, I love that, but I do want to change gears a little bit. It's November, and what many know is Adam has one of the most impressive beards I've ever seen in my life. It's a bit of a paradox to the top of his head. That's fine. So as it relates to November, it's actually a very, very big month for you. And I don't mean that because of the Masters. I actually mean that because it is basically the month of the beard. We've got Movember. We've got No Shave November. I got to know, man, is it weird knowing that the Masters was your tag for this year and not just like the love of the beard month?
Yeah, it's an odd month, but in the best possible way. I tell you, we need something, for God's sakes. We need something good, and the Masters being this week is something that we can all look forward to, and you know, I just enjoy it on its highest level. Movember is such a weird month because, like, I'm a big fan of the mustache. I don't ever grow mine out too bad, but a few years ago, I had like a big roly mustache that I twirled up. But like, the wife doesn't really like it. And then, like, if I eat a hamburger or something, it kind of gets in the way. And eating is so important in my life, so I got to keep the mustache a little. I'm getting a little scraggly now because we don't come into the office nearly as much. So I just like go full Grizzly Adam and let it grow out. And I don't shave and edge it up as much as I could. But, you know, Dan, the boss man's pretty cool with it. And we got some events here in the next couple of days. I'm going to try to get as presentable as this balded bearded weirdo can for an event. So, I mean, at this point, you're going to get, I am what I am. It ain't getting any prettier. So, you know, it's all I got. I got no hair in the North Pole and I got a beard south, so it's an odd thing.
So you said bearded weirdo, and I'm going to lean on weirdo because I think some people are going to attack you here when I tell when I was asking for ideas to talk about during the episode, what you were interested in talking about. One of the things was your distaste for pimento cheese. Now, that's a big one for this week, and I'm going to give you an out. I'm going to ask you first, if you're more than welcome to rant as much as you need to with regards to the cheese itself, but I also want to say, if you're not eating that, what will you be eating while watching the Masters this week?
Well, the pimento cheese thing, I get it. It's a tradition. We all love it. We love things of the Masters, but it's not good. Like, it, or else we'd be eating pimento cheeses like all year round. Like, people say that around Thanksgiving, right? Like, oh, turkey and cranberry. But like, people do eat turkey year round, and like, cranberry sauce is still a thing that happens. But like, pimento cheese is like, no one's making a daggum pimento cheese in like July. You know, it's either April or this year, but like, pimento cheese turns into this like woke thing that every golf person loves. And, oh yeah, I got to make some homemade pimento cheese. Like, look at my little like thing I'm doing. And
so that's just Ray Birdie on Twitter at @RehBirdie.
Yeah. So I have no love for the pimento cheese. Give me a grilled cheese with just like some regular American cheese in there. Like, I don't need pimento cheese. It's just funny. It's a Masters thing. I get it. It's their little dilly do. And I mean, I've tried it. Like, literally, it's like every couple of years. Obviously, we're not Masters this year, but I've been fortunate enough. We're right down the road. We get over there. So like, every few years, I'm like, let me grab one. I mean, they're $1.50. Let me try this out. And I try, and I'm just like, it doesn't hit home for me. I mean, give me that barbecue sandwich for days that they have. I'll just hit that one. I'll eat two or three of those in a day while I'm there. Those are great. I mean, and again, people eat barbecue sandwiches year round. Why are we eating pimento cheese year round? Because it's not good. It's just not good, man.
Sadly, I can't relate because I've actually never been on the ground, so I have no idea. But, you know, hopefully I can change that in the next couple of years. But again, that comes back to, what will you eat? What is your go-to? If there's something you've just got to have, someone asks you, hey, I'm coming into town, where are we going to dinner? What's the plan?
Oh man, I'm a real sucker for Japanese. I'm not a big fan of like the sushi, you know, like I'm a California roll sort of guy, so I'm very safe, but I love a good Japanese restaurant. Very fortunate to have a lot of good friends here at the company. We're obviously Japanese based, so we always have three or four really cool Japanese guys who work from the home office and come over here, and so we get some really like awesome authentic places in Atlanta. Like, oh no, this is like where the actual menu is in Japanese, not like a hibachi where they're throwing it in their hat and doing the volcano and butterfly and stuff like that, like actual Japanese restaurants and really good food. So love a good Japanese place if we can find one. But yeah, I mean, barbecue, I already said it. I love a nice little barbecue place. Give me like a nice big pulled pork sandwich, like if we go to Memphis or somewhere like that. Love a, you know, Nashville, where our entire home office is. We'll go up there sometimes for meetings and, you know, just hit up a good barbecue place. That's kind of my go-to outside of just steak and potatoes. Kind of, you know, give me a good steak and potato place and you really can't go wrong there.
I think you saved yourself well, considering you guys are out of Georgia and you led with Japanese and came back to that more American traditional perspective, which is pretty funny to me. But I can relate to the California roll thing. And I know you've been down to the PGA show a number of times and know that our good friend JB is particularly fond of what do you call it? Sushi down in the... I can't even think of the name. At the Rosen. Yeah. Oh, yeah. he always goes real hard there on the sushi. So you might get a text from him letting him know that you're not of your right mind. But I think it was worth it to make that claim. And I definitely understand where you're coming from. I like that. I'm a California guy too. A roll guy.
Give me something cooked in there. I can't get behind it. And again, it's like the pimento cheese. I'll try. We'll go at PGA show you brought up. So we typically have a pretty big one night where we go eat with the Golf Channel, and they bring out this big boat and it has tons of everything on it and everyone's eating it. And like Ken Fujimori, he's one of our product guys from Japan. He's always like, Adam, you must eat, you know, and I'll try it, you know, trying to be respectful. And I'm just like, dude, it just doesn't, you know, bring me some fried rice, give me some edamame, and give me some like you know, hibachi stuff. You know, I'm cool with that, but I just I'm like, dude, I can't get behind it. I can eat it, but like I don't really want to. So why don't y'all eat it? You know, Lindsay, my wife, is always the same about onions. Hate onions. She puts onions in everything, and I'm just like, she's like, oh, just eat it. You won't taste it. And I'm always like, I can taste it. And I don't want it. I mean, like, this is not a, like, this isn't grounds for like, and it just like, just let me pick it out. And I don't want to eat onions. That's the gist of it. Like, you know, they're, oh, you just eat it. You won't. I'm like, well, I don't want to eat it. Like, I'm not making you eat something you don't want to eat. But anyway.
Onions. Interesting. How about burgers? Yeah. Is there a place for an egg on a burger?
No.
Interesting.
No. No eggs on burgers. All right. You want to hear some major backstory about eggs? This is a major.
Well, don't ruin it for me. Let's be clear.
No, it's nothing. It's nothing bad. So I grew up on a farm, my family farm. We had chickens, obviously, as going. We had hogs. We grew corn, peanuts, big country down in North Florida. My dad still farms a little. But like we ate so many eggs. Because we had eggs. I mean, we had chickens. We ate so many eggs. I ate eggs for breakfast. And so, like, literally, I remember, like, I just got burnt out so much on eggs. And I remember I told my mom when I was a teenager, I said, when I become an adult and a grown man, I'm done with eggs. I'm so sick of them. I'm tired. And I literally have not. I mean, like, obviously, eggs are in things, but no scrambled eggs for me, nothing. I mean, I would not eat a burger if it had an egg sitting on top of it. No, thank you. This is personal preference. You can put an egg on it. More power to you.
If there is a menu item that had an, this is basically my perspective. If I go to a place I've never been to before and there is a burger on the menu with an egg on it, one, I would say 99% of the time I'm getting that burger. It's just my personal choice. It's common sense, Adam.
You know what? Like, what should be on a burger is meat.
Yeah.
Like cow meat.
Yeah. You not know, the nice thing about putting egg on a burger is then you get to put more bacon on it too. So.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, you know, you put bacon, like bacon for sure on a burger. I'm all about crispy bacon, not like soft, loose bacon. Give me some crispy bacon. But like, I can't get behind an egg on it. I mean, again, especially if a psychopath is like a runny one on there. Now that is like terrorist territory. Like no way. Something's wrong with
it. It changes the whole experience.
You're a bad person if it's a runny egg on a burger. You're a horrible person.
At Ray Birdie on Twitter. So there was there's a Twitter post that caught my attention. I think it was last week. I posted this a little bit on the THP community, and you had a pretty strong perspective on it as well. We were invited by the European Tour to experience Rafa Nadal's golf swing, and reminded at the same time that he's in fact a scratch golfer. Now, I genuinely thought that he was like, he plays left-handed and he had borrowed a friend's right-handed club and was going to see what he could do with it. And then I realized that that's his swing. Do you care to share a perspective on that?
Look, man, I'm not a instructor connoisseur or anything like that, because you're certainly gonna get people like, oh well, you know, look at Furyk and look at Wolf and all these guys have these weird swings, but that ain't no scratch swing. I he might be a good golfer and he might, you know, shoot something with a 7 in front of it, but to be a scratch golfer with that, I don't see it. One, and like we have a ton of athletes come in. We have Larry Fitzgerald. We have like John Smoltz, who legit is a scratch golfer who plays on the Champions Tour and is qualified for the Senior Players Open. I mean, we've had tons of guys, Ed Reed, come through here that are athletes and stuff like that. And, you know, they can get away with a lot because they're athletes. Like, you know, don't get me wrong. Like Larry Fitzgerald's a good player. He's not a scratch. He knows he's not a scratch. He's not in the gin system as a scratch, but his swing is, let's say it's a lot structured, a lot better than Rafa's was. And I love him. I mean, one of my favorite tennis players of all time. Love him on a clay court. It's the most poetic thing you can ever watch, him sliding around, making all those moves. But I don't see him going to a course from the Blues or the Blacks even, and just working that swing around the course, even par every time he tees it up. I just don't see it. And I think what's funny is media. Yeah, I think media has this fiction of making like other athletes seem like they're better at golf than they actually are, because that makes more sense. It makes them cooler and whatever. They're not going to say, oh, Rafa, is this a four swing? You know, it's so much nicer to say like, oh, he's a scratch. Like he doesn't have a handicap, but he's a scratch.
Do you think they felt like they had to put that out there with the swing that he showed?
Well, they did highlight his swing and talk about it more in some other videos. So it seemed like a setup for that. And, yeah. You know, they really had him like in his slot, you know, with the racket, and then like where it was with the swing, and like he hit a few shots and in slow motion, they had some slow-mo in slow motion. I think it looked even worse.
Really?
it was like really stuck, and like he only was like half up. It was like John Rahm, but even shorter. So
that was a perspective. That was a perspective I had, is he just looked genuinely stuck, almost like he was pulling. And I'm no golf coach. I'm not studied the game to that effect at all. Yeah. Not even a little bit. It was purely reactionary, where you just look at it and you say, huh. And I liken it a lot to his backhand in tennis. And I'll admit I was incredibly disappointed he didn't grunt as he often does when he went to hit it. That was probably my biggest disdain from the whole thing, was that I didn't get that. But I'm a Federer guy, so I was probably already biased. but I like the commentary that comes back and says, you know, we have unique swings in golf, and you mentioned Furyk and Wolf, like great examples. What I think is interesting about those guys is, no matter how unpoetic the starting point of their swing is, by the time they get into the most critical place of a golf swing, that is where the magic happens, as it were. They just seem to be lacking at that point. And you know, maybe I'm assuming he plays a draw, like a big draw.
It almost looked like a little smother cut or something.
Oh, you think so?
I have no idea. But I love your point there, because like everyone, when Wolf was coming up, which at the time literally just posted a freeze frame of him and impact. It was beautiful. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know, the pros are in such a different spot than most amateurs. Most amateurs are jumping out of the way, you know, they're casting, you know, they're raising up, where all these pros are down on it. You know, the hands are so close to their hips, but their hips are turned. They've already released. They're whipping the club through. And like if Furyk is a little different because he's more, you know, like turned, he's almost turned to his target completely. Mm-hmm. But like there's so many like parallels that are almost identical when you put Tiger, Rory, Dustin, Koepka, Bryson, all those guys that are free swing. Like, there's a lot of things they're doing very similar when they're hitting the ball. They might bring club up high or bring it inside. Exactly. But when they're hitting the golf ball, there's a lot of similarities going on. It's just how you get there, how you drive the taxi to the destination. But they're all still getting in the same spot. But you know, you look at amateurs and you see free strains of what they're doing at impact, and there's no hip movement and clubs already over here. Right. You know, there's things of that nature standing up rather than like, you know, really covering the ball. And there is differences for sure. And, you know, maybe he's a scratch golfer at his executive course where he plays.
I'm sure he wears that watch to the executive course he plays. Yeah.
I'm probably gonna get flamed for talking shit about him.
I think it's fun though. I think the reality is we react as golfers to what's normal to us, and just the same way people react to Wolf and to Furyk when you weren't familiar with them, you have an opportunity to judge someone. And I don't even think John Rahm's swing is all that poetic. I think it's kind of frustrating to watch him not swing all the way.
No,
but I don't have a problem with Tony Finau's swing, which is kind of weird.
Rahm's is tight and tense, and it's like he's like holding the club, and it's a very like powerful and robust swing. And then you have guys like Furyk, who's just kind of like a loose goose, you know, full meter drop, or Fred Couples.
Freddie's a perfect example. Lifts poetry in motion.
Yeah, and it's right back, and it's like there's a lot of ways to skin a cat on tour, and guys have won doing a lot of different things. I mean, you see Bryson. No, I mean, literally 5 or 6 years ago, people were laughing at him just for using same length clubs. And everybody kept saying like, he's going to eventually, if he wants to stay on tour, he's going to have to quit doing that. He might compete and he might keep his card, but people were saying like, he's going to have to get out of that if he's going to win.
Seven
win in a major. I mean, he's, you know, borderline way to a Hall of Fame career already. He doubles up everything. He's probably a Hall of Famer. Get the 20 wins and a couple majors.
Right. I would love to expand more on Bryson, and I definitely want to do that with you, but we're coming to that point where I would hope people are still enjoying the podcast, but I'm worried that we're getting a little bit long. So this is an open invitation to have you come back on, but I do want to give you an opportunity at the end to give me your thoughts on how you guys do this week. I always root for couples. It's like a rite of passage for me every year. Not a rite of passage. It's an experience that I feel obligated to cheer on couples to win every single year. And he's always kind of sort of almost there and teases me every year. Yeah. But from your perspective, how do you think the guys do?
All right, I'll start with Fred first. I like Fred's mojo going into Augusta. He always has something he can kind of click on. And actually, we were lucky enough to talk with him back in April when the Masters got delayed and everyone was at home. So we did a quick little interview for him, and he pretty much described it as he gets reinvigorated when he gets to Augusta. And, you know, he likes being around the guys. I mean, it's nothing against the Champions Tour guys, but, you know, he always has kind of a running practice round with Tiger, which they did yesterday, Monday. Bryson weaseled his way into that one, which was pretty awesome.
That was a foursome right there, man. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, JT and all those fours, just very full foursome. So Fred loves that. He likes hanging with the guys. He played really good the Champions Tour event the week before. He is the first time I can remember him teeing it up the week before the Masters. He played really good on the weekend. I think he shot 65 with no bogeys on Sunday. So he's a momentum guy, and he's always had that kind of vibe. He loves Augusta. He feels like he plays well. So long-winded answer here. But I think he easily makes the cut. You know, they reduced the cut down to 50. But I think he easily makes the cut. It's like he can't shoot a blow-up round at Augusta. He may shoot a round over par or whatever, but he's not going to go out there and just shoot himself in the foot. So I think he's going to I think he finishes right in the middle of all this 50 when it's all said and done. He's going to be like T22 or somewhere around there, T27. Tiger's almost identical to the way I feel about couples. I think he feels like it's like your home course, right? You know, you go play with all your buddies and y'all go play somewhere else. And then when you get back to your home course, you kind of boop, you fall into that, like, you're going to shoot about four strokes better when it's your home track. You know, I feel like Tiger feels the Masters is that. I mean, you know, when he won it in 19, he kind of was coming off a streak of not playing that well. I mean, he hasn't played that great in the last couple of events. He's played okay. He's made cuts. He hasn't missed the cut by a lot. There's a lot of expectations for him. Even when he makes the cut, people are disappointed, but that's pretty good. So I like his chances. I want him to be in contention so badly. I feel like I want to, like, force it to happen. I think he's going to be up there pretty close. I think he's going to have a top 10.
Top 10?
Like, just easy top 10. I don't ever not want to pick him because it sounds like I'm not picking, but I am going to pick Bryson. I think Bryson's – that's the only reason I'm not picking Tiger. I think Bryson's going to win this thing. He's just so much confidence. You know, we all know golf is a game of confidence. I did speak to him at East Lake, you know, like a month ago when he was here, and he talked about how good he's putting the ball, and everyone's, you know, we're all focused on the distance and how he's hitting the ball far and all that good stuff. But, like, he talked about this year, he's putted it better than he ever has. He said, you know, there were some tournaments where I didn't putt that well, but he talked about Rocket Mortgage. And, you know, this is before the US Open too. And he was like, man, I putted it so good that week. And he was like, my putting is right where I want it. You know, I'm trying to peak. And he mentioned, I'm trying to peak to go to the US Open and then on to the Masters. And so traditionally he hasn't putted well at Augusta. And I hope that he's picked, you know, Fred and Tiger's brain, you know, Monday, and really talked to them a lot and tried to understand the nuances. So I think he's putting so much better than in years past at Augusta. And I can tell you, he loves his US Open. I'm 100% sure of that. But he has told us several times that the Masters is his number one I want to win major in his career. That's his mind. So I literally think that this dude has been sitting at home for the last month just obsessing over winning the match. He probably has like a rope board with like all these things and, you know, all the things he's going to do. So I got Bryson winning this thing.
That doesn't sound like Bryson at all to be sort of obsessive over anything. It seems like way out of character for him. I think it's cool that you have two guys there that are extremely polarizing from a fan perspective. I know there are lots of guys out there who adore Tiger. And by lots, I mean millions upon millions. And you have some folks out there who maybe don't want him to win. And I think Bryson isn't, the career isn't equitable to this point, but he definitely has his clean, confirmed supporters out there and a whole lot of opposition because he is going so much against the grain in a lot of what we understand to be. I mean, he's like Rafa's swing in a mental perspective elsewhere. You know, it's just, I love it because it gets people talking. I love it because it shows that there's so many more dimensions to this game than we already know there is. And frankly, I'd love to see him win it. Now, do I want to see him overpower Augusta? Maybe not, but I think his short game will be the biggest determinant of that. So, you know, you mentioned putting a lot. I'm not a huge fan of watching him putt. I'm a huge fan of watching the ball after he hits the putt. I love to see what he can do with a putter. You know, that's kind of my thing. But, you know, I think the biggest story here.
Yeah, he has a very putting stance for sure.
Yeah. So I'm definitely rooting for both of, well, I guess all three of those guys, and you know, in a week's time we'll know a lot more. So yeah, I would say thanks for coming on, man. It's been an absolute pleasure. As I smash my microphone here, it's been a blast chatting with you, and I would definitely love to have you back to talk a little bit more about Bryson and maybe some of the avenues you guys are taking here in the future at Bridgestone.
No, this has been amazing. We're about an hour in, so if anybody's still listening, bless you. Appreciate you hanging on and listen to some kind of insider stuff, and hopefully come back on and we can talk about, you know, Bryson winning back to back and, you know, on to a few more majors next year, and the Masters shoot will be just a few more months down the road. So no, for sure. Thanks for having me on. Love the show here. Big listener, first time caller in, appreciate it.
Well, thank you, my friend, and enjoy the festivities this weekend. Bye, everyone. If you're playing this weekend, if you're not watching Masters and you're playing, play well. Good luck, and try to convince yourself it's a good idea. I'll be watching the Masters.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.